Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. If Kurt in Minneapolis is listening tonight, I did as he suggested and tuned in to VH1 Classic last night at 1 a.m. Eastern Time and saw a documentary on the making of Dark Side of the Moon. Wow! For someone who thinks the Floyd produced some of the best music of the 70s, 80s, 90s, rock music, symphonic rock, art rock, whatever you want to call it. It was a real treat. Thanks, Kurt. That was a very, very cool documentary. And, you know, it ended at 2 a.m., and then Molly woke up a little bit. So finally at 3:30, quarter four this morning, I think I went to sleep. Thanks, Kurt! There's never been an administration in this country. There has been a fiction, but there's never been an administration in this country that has butchered language or parsed sentences the way this filthy Bush crime family has. It was announced yesterday that the United States now will sit down and hold talks with Iraq, Iran, and Syria. Now, this is what the Iraq Study Group had suggested, of course. The first meeting held next month will be at the ambassadorial level, and then Rice will sit down with the foreign ministers from Damascus and Tehran at a second meeting in April. Now, the reason I mention this is that what Condoleezza Rice is saying is that the series of meetings has been initiated by Iraq. It's Iraq's idea, which is bat squeeze. You know it as well as I do. Maliki doesn't go to the bathroom without first checking with Negroponte or Dick Cheney. That's our puppet regime, just like Hamid Karzai is our puppet regime in Afghanistan. Just like General Jaruzelski was the puppet leader for the Soviets in Poland during the Cold War. I mean, you know, come on. We all know about puppet regimes. We all know about who runs these puppet regimes. But in order to see, the Bush crime family will do anything, even throw more people, Americans, into meat grinder, even blow up more children, anything to prevent itself from admitting, not that it's wrong, which it has been since the moment it first sucked in its foul, fetid breath, but even admitting that it's changing course. It'll do anything. It'll say anything. It'll spin words until we're all dizzy. And that's exactly what's going on now. Now, in light of that, we have more from Tony Snow for you tonight, who continues to prove his idiocy, his ineptitude, his incompetence, and his heritage. Fox News Channel, that's where he comes from. Now, this time, tonight, we will have Tony telling you all about the Condi Rice flip-flop on diplomatic relations with Iran and Syria. Only Tony Snow will stand there and say that this new course is not a new course. That the Bush crime family never said they wouldn't sit down and hold three-party or four-party talks on this issue. It's infuriating. Most of us should get to the point that Tony Snow is nothing but a jackass, a useless blob of protoplasm standing in front of this podium taking questions from a mostly useless Washington press corps, and who gives a damn? You know what I'm saying? To take this guy with any degree of seriousness is to render yourself a gibbering maniac. So why bother? Well, I guess it's because this little rat bastard, Tony Snow, this glib, empty-headed man who stands up there every day, is infuriating because he is the mouthpiece for the most lying, corrupt administration in our history. This gang makes Nixon look like a piker. Come on, for real. So that's why it gets to me. It really does, and it shouldn't. It really shouldn't, because Tony Snow is not even a footnote to any history, anywhere, anytime, any place, about anything. He's a temporary face from a disgusting, discredited so-called news organization that employs trolls, maniacs, and psychopaths, and he's out there to put some kind of a glib face on a corrupt, filthy administration. So who cares? Somehow I do. It just pisses me off. For years, Rice has been saying, she's another puppet, she has been saying exactly what Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bush told her to say. There was no point in engaging Iraq's neighbors, Iran and Syria. No point in bringing them into any kind of diplomatic effort to end the violence in Iraq. Over and over and over and over and over, she said it. The Iraq Study Group, the adults from snarky, filthy Pappy Bush, who is watching his one of his sons take the entire planet over the abyss, the Baker Hamilton folks said that this was the key to solving the problem of Iraq. Sit down and talk. You're disturbing business, Junior. We don't give a goddamn about how many Iraqis die. We couldn't care less about the American military. We don't care if the streets run hip deep in blood. But, Junior, you're messing up the business environment. That's why they want him to stop. They don't care about death and war and destruction. Baker, Hamilton, Pappy Bush, these thugs, these killers, they couldn't care less. Except to the extent that it interrupts their business dealings. They want to do business with Iran. Oh, my God. All the equipment that's going to need to be sold to them as they build scores of nuclear reactors. Because the Iranians understand that eventually their oil is going to run out. All that business. That was the business that Rumsfeld was in. Back in the 80s, working with a French company that sold nuclear reactors to North Korea. Well, components for nuclear reactors. This is what these people do. They don't care. These Bush crime family thugs. They don't care how many people die. They don't care how many lies they tell. But by God, when one of their member gets a little bit, starts stepping on his own foreskin and causing things like disruption of business. Holy Jesus, rein this boy in. So that's what the Iraq Study Group's recommendation was all about. I had nothing about to do about peace or no more dead Iraqi children or the possibility of no dead Iranian children. No. Iraqi children, who cares? But it's business that he's disrupting. Hence, the Iraq Study Group. So, little Miss Twinkle Toes has been out there saying that they were never going to sit down and talk with the axis of evil, even though the Iraq Study Group said that was the key to solving the problem. Bush crime family wasn't going to do it. Useless. Until yesterday. And what happened was, sometime during one of these trips to Camp David or Prairie Chapel, whatever, the adults finally got a hold of Junior, probably put a forearm up under his chin, backed him against the wall, put pressure on his Adam's apple, grabbed him by his belt buckle and said, "Look, you little rat son of a bitch, you're interrupting business. Sit down and talk." Oh, okay. So they're going to have the multilateral meetings that include Iraq, Iran, Syria, United States. Total flip-flop for the American public to try to absorb and figure out. But nobody told Tony Snow. He got out there today in the most blatant example of Orwellian newspeak, of Soviet gibberish that I've heard from him yet. Tony said it was always the administration's position to negotiate with Iran and Syria. This announcement from Condi was nothing new. Nothing new whatsoever. Forget the fact that she herself called it new yesterday at the Senate. Tony says, this old stuff. And furthermore, the White House reporters' confusion over this issue proves they are dense, thick-headed numbskulls. You got to hear this. Where do you hear these sound bites? This streak of newspeak almost surpasses the time a slow Tony tried to convince the press that Bush never said stay the course, despite the fact that he said it almost every time he spoke in public, over 100 times in just the last couple of years. And everybody, I mean, from the blogosphere to this program to Randy to, I'm sure, Tom Hartman, everybody was playing Bush saying it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Stay the course, stay the course, got to stay the course, stay the course, stay the course. And that dumb bastard Tony Snow's out there said, we never said stay the course. That was a doozy. But this Condi contradiction is a real close second. So stick around. You got to hear this. We'll play it coming up in about 15 minutes. All right? A couple, three sound bites from this jackass. It's unbelievable. I don't know why I let this stuff bother me. I guess it's because these people just so irritate me. I'd like to get one of these right wingers in a room and just pimp slap the hell out of them. You know what I'm saying?
Stay the course in Iraq. We'll stay the course.
We could only find 8 times where he'd ever use the term stay the course.
There to stay the course.
Stay the course.
We're going to stay the course. Have the nerve to stay the course if we stay the course.
And hence the clarification.
We're there to stay the course.
We stay the course.
We will stay the course.
We've never been stay the course.
8 times.
We're there to stay the course.
Stay
the course.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
22 past the hour. So today's Washington Post makes certain that we all get it. It says here, Rice and other administration officials emphasize, however, that these conferences would be led and organized by the Iraqi government and not, as the Iraq Study Group suggested, by the United States. Oh, please, for Christ's sake. We'll play that sound for you here in just a second. Andy Ostroy is a blogger, editor and publisher of Ostroy Report, based in New York City. This is kind of cool. This is from yesterday. He says, make no mistake, former Vice President Al Gore will be our next president. He says, he writes, I'm as confident about that assertion as I am that George W. Bush will go down in history as America's worst president ever. Gore is the right man at the right time for many reasons, and it's clear that the momentum and buzz is shifting his way big time. At Sunday's Oscar ceremony, Gore's movie producers took home the Oscar for the best feature of a documentary. And in October, Gore also will likely, according to Andy Ostroy here, be the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize for being the planet's biggest advocate in the fight against climate change. And even just the nomination puts him in the company of such independent thinkers and statesmen and activists as Dr. Martin Luther King, Jimmy Carter, Elie Wiesel, and Mother Teresa. And then Andy writes, now, let's talk chops. Gore's an enlisted Vietnam vet who served 4 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives, 2 terms in the Senate, 8 years as vice president, and in one of the most successful administrations ever. Let's not forget that he won the popular vote in 2000, and as many say, the Electoral College as well. So, he's hip, brilliant, highly experienced. Is America ready for a real leader after 2 terms of a guy who makes Jim Carrey's Dumb and Dumber character seem downright cerebral? When Gore announces, Andy writes, which I suspect he will do, likely to in September, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton will have canceled each other out, and he will leapfrog over the carnage to the front of the line. At that time, he'll have tremendous political and financial currency and support from which to launch a successful campaign. And in this writer's opinion, Andy concludes, John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Mitt Romney will be coughing up dust. Yeah, I can certainly see that scenario. It all depends on Al Gore. But if you want to add your voice to the cacophony of people saying, run, Al, run, go to Draft Gore. Somebody sent me an email, said they went to Draft Al Gore, and it was just nothing but gibberish, or I don't know. No, DraftGore.com. DraftGore.com. And sign the petition. I don't know what it's up to. It was 46,000 last night. Either word is not getting out about that website, or Andy Austria is wrong, but that petition needs to get up around a couple million signatures. 46,000 doesn't quite do it, in my opinion. Update on the Walter Reed Army Hospital, the medical centers, this according to the Army Times, soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center's medical hold unit say they have been told they will wake up at 6 a.m. every morning and have the rooms ready for inspection by 7 and that they must not speak to the media. One medical hold unit soldier said, speaking on the condition of anonymity, quote, some soldiers believe this is a form of punishment for the trouble soldiers cause by talking to the media. Son of a bitch. See, this is the stuff that makes me, just crazy. It is unusual, if not entirely unheard of, for soldiers to have daily inspections after basic training. According to the Army Times, soldiers say their sergeant major gathered troops at 6 p.m. Monday to tell them they must follow their chain of command when asking for help with their medical evaluation paperwork or when they spot mold, mice, or other problems in their quarters. Follow the chain of command! The Pentagon has also clamped down on media coverage of any and all Defense Department medical facilities to include suspending planned projects by CNN and the Discovery Channel. Yeah, you know why, don't you? Of course you do. Because the way we treat our veterans, I don't care about the war. The way we treat our veterans is enough to gag a maggot. And it's all ordered by this filthy, disgusting, corrupt Bush crime family. You know those brave Vietnam veterans in the executive branch, right?
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It does indeed. It's about 25 before the hour. All right, let's share the pearls of wisdom here for this from this halfwit, Tony Snow, and then we will give you just one example of Tony Snow not knowing what the hell he's talking about, and that will be Condoleezza Rice. So. Snow was hammered from the useless White House press corps today with questions about this flip-flop that the Bush crime family has effected on bringing Syria and Iran to the table in attempts at diplomacy. Oh, hold your nose and say it. Diplomacy. Oh, God. Diplomacy. Oh, I can't say it. I'm a member of the Bush crime family. We just want to kill stuff as long as we have a nice hidey hole. But as usual, Tony was no help at all. Instead, he merely maintained there was no flip-flop. No flip-flop. Condi never said that it would be pointless to follow the Iraq study group proposal to negotiate with Syria and Iran. Nobody ever said that in this filthy, disgusting administration. So, first reporter says, Tony, you seem to be anxious to dissuade anybody from interpreting this new negotiation plan with Iran and Syria as some change in policy. What's wrong with saying the administration has heard what the Baker-Hamilton group suggested? They've heard the calls from the Hill. We're flexible. Instead, you're going out of your way to knock down any impression that perhaps you're flexible diplomatically?
Flexible diplomatically? I mean, what exactly do you mean flexible diplomatically?
I don't understand what the problem is, why you're going so far out of your way to say, you know, what we're doing now shouldn't be interpreted as reaching out diplomatically to Iran and Syria?
Because this is an Iraqi initiative, and the one thing you do not, you know, Jim, you do not strengthen your hand by showing, quote, flexibility in the absence of activity on the part of those parties, especially when you have taken a public negotiating position on it. What you're defining as flexibility is, I think what you're saying is, if the U.S. gives up on the precondition that has been agreed upon in an international forum, through, yes, absolutely. I'm telling you what the real effect is.
Oh, well, thanks again, Tony, for once again rewriting the reporter's question. And did you hear what he said? He says, because this is an Iraqi initiative, and the one thing you do not strengthen your hand by showing flexibility in the absence of activity on the part of those parties, especially when you have taken a public negotiating position on it. In other words, Tony admits it's been the stated administration position not to negotiate with Iran and Syria. But this guy is so abysmally ignorant and stupid and Fox News Channel spawn that he doesn't even realize he's contradicting himself within two sentences. These people are just infuriating. Why do I pay any attention to them? I don't know. Same reporter keeps hammering, only to end up being called, more or less called a numbskull by the king of all numbskulls. Slow Tony the Sleepy Snowman, right? Is he not the king of all numbskulls? The reporter continues, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, why are you so invested? Why are you so dug in on talking tough on Iran and Syria while you're going to do something in the next month or two that you have clearly stayed away from embracing up to this point?
Wait a minute. This is where you got it completely wrong. What do you mean we've stayed away? I have just read for you a whole list of occasions.
This sounds like the tenor of what's about to happen sounds entirely different, and I'm wondering.
I don't think it is. The Iraqis are putting together a meeting, and it's going to be a business-like meeting. If you're expecting suddenly new chummy relations, you've created a scenario that is not justified by the facts on the ground or the precedent.
Could it be that you're concerned if you are seen as embarking on a new policy? Is the concern that the old policy was wrong?
Bingo!
No, the concern is you guys are getting it wrong, and I don't know how to get you to get it through your heads that it's not new. I mean, it's not new. What's going on here is something that has a long set of precedents.
Oh, my God. God. Yeah. I'm trying to tell you guys, if you just get it through your numb-ass heads, where were you? We've always advocated negotiations with Iran and Syria. Always. We've always said that. We've always said, why doesn't Iran and Syria sit down and discuss the situation in Iraq? Always. You know, even though Condi sounded like she was breaking some exclusive news at the Senate hearing yesterday, she wasn't stating anything new at all. We've always said this. Let's sit down and negotiate with Iran and Syria. Always. We've always said it. We've always said it. My God. Now, what these useless White House reporters are obliquely referring to is testimony from the shoe lady to the Senate Appropriations Committee yesterday, wherein she announced the new plan to include Iran and Syria in diplomatic efforts with Iraq. You know, she announces it yesterday after the Pappy Bush's thugs, you know, they get Cheney out of town. They send his ass halfway around the world so he can play tough guy with Hamid Karzai, this poor Unocal oil lobbyist who's now the president of Afghanistan. And they send him into Pakistan so he can get tough with the little military dictator over there, Musharraf. And all the while, you can bet your ass, truth seeker, that Baker and Carlucci and some of these people in the Carlyle group were thinking, Jesus Christ, can somebody just kill him while he's over there? Just off him! He's out of control! He doesn't listen to us! You know, referring to Cheney. Listen to what she said to the senators yesterday and tell me if this is not a foreign policy flip-flop. No matter what Tony Slowman said.
There's one additional component to this diplomatic offensive that I would like to highlight today. It is a new component.
New?
Prime Minister Maliki believes, and President Bush and I agree, that success in Iraq requires the positive support of Iraq's neighbors.
Really?
This is one of the key findings, of course, of the Iraq Study Group.
Uh-huh.
And it is an important dimension that many in the Senate and in the Congress have brought to our attention, and I've had very fruitful discussions about how to do this.
Really?
So I'm pleased to inform you that the Iraqis are launching a new diplomatic initiative, which we are going to fully support.
No kidding.
The government of Iraq is preparing for an expanded neighbors meeting, first at the sub-ministerial level, that will take place in Baghdad in the first half of March.
Uh-huh.
Invitees would include Iraq's immediate neighbors, as well as representatives from other regional states, multilateral organizations, and the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, including, of course, the United States.
Wow!
I would note that the Iraqi government has invited all of its neighbors, including Syria and Iran.
Well, hot damn! Can you believe... One last thing, sweetie. Before you go buy some new shoes, would you tiptoe over to the White House and tell that ignorant Fox News jackass what you just told us? Because you know what, Condi? Tomorrow, he's going to stand in front of the crack White House press corps and deny everything you just said. What did she say? It is a new component. Well, slap me twice and call me Sally. I just heard Tony Snow say it wasn't new. He said it twice, in fact. Miss Rice, I've got the soundbite right here. Call me up, sweetheart. 1-800-989-1480. I'll play it for you. Here it is. In case you're listening, Miss Rice, you sweetie, you shoe lady, you useless member of the Bush crime family. Here it is. Here's your boy. Listen to him, Miss Rice.
Wait a minute. This is where you got it completely. What do you mean we've stayed away? I have just read for you a whole list of occasions.
This sounds like the tenor of what's about to happen sounds entirely different, and I'm just wondering.
I don't think it is. The Iraqis are putting together a meeting, and it's going to be a business-like meeting. If you're expecting suddenly new chummy relations,
chummy?
You've created a scenario that's
chummy?
Not justified by the facts on the ground or the precedent.
Could it be that you're concerned if you are seen as embarking on a new policy? Is the concern that the old policy was wrong?
No, the concern is you guys are getting it wrong, and I don't know how to get you to get it through your heads that it's not new.
Use a gun.
I mean, it's not new. What's going on here is something that has a long set of precedents.
It's not new. It's not new. Tony, the shoe lady says it's new. You say it's not new. I really don't care, except you're such a jackass. You are as useless as teats on a bull. Why don't you go back to Fox Newscast and play grab ass with Sean? Go do something that'll make you feel like a man. Get the hell out of town. Who is this guy? My God! It's not new. We have a new component. It's not new. We have a new component. It's not new. We have a new component. Oh, wait. I get it. It's a new component of the same old policy. Oh, okay. I get it. Yeah, okay.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep.
They need to shut their yaps. The big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Hello, O'Reilly.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Oh, man. I I expect Tony Snow, since he is a spawn of Fox News Channel, to be totally useless. But I, you know, after 6 years of paying close attention to the crack White House press corps that I never really used to pay too much attention to, until this murderous little twit George Bush stole the office of the presidency. What I've noticed is that with one or two just obvious exceptions, one is constant, Helen Thomas. The other is it fluctuates among a couple, three members of the crack White House press corps. But everyone else, they're just asses. They're totally useless. Who's this guy? How did Les Kinsolving get press credentials to attend White House press briefings? And a 95-year-old right-wing talk show host from where? Baltimore?
He is probably one of the most entertaining moment members in the press corps.
Well, I mean, so is a ventriloquist or a juggler, but do they belong in the White House press office?
No, but my day wouldn't be complete without Les saying, Tony, does the president have any opinion on a woman who wants to have an abortion in her 9th month of pregnancy?
Well,
surely he does, Tony. Surely the president has spoken on this at length with you many times.
Okay, maybe there needs to be one goof in there for comic relief. But, you know, Les Kinsolving notwithstanding, this is supposed to be serious business. These White House press briefings allegedly are where the American public, through the filter of our crack dedicated news media, it's supposed to be where we get the information necessary to make informed decisions about what our executive branch is doing. Ha ha, I know, laugh along with me. I just listened to my own sentence, and it's as much gibberish as what Tony Snow says. We're not supposed to listen along to make informed anything. We don't have a First Amendment anymore. We don't have a Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Eighth Amendment, Tenth Amendment, Twelfth Amendment. All that stuff is gone. So what's this about? We don't have habeas corpus. What's this about making, oh, come on, Malloy, making informed decisions? Ah-ha! Surely you jest. Okay, I jest. And that's what's so irritating. Frightening. Enraging is that the people who at one time were supposed to be the bulwark against tyranny in this country, other than armed revolution, the press, to expose these jackasses, no matter who the jackasses were, to expose them, the pen being mightier than the sword, or something like that. So what has happened? We have the crack White House press corps, with the exception of Helen Thomas, every day, and occasionally one or two float into relevancy and float immediately out again. We have a White House press corps that does nothing except enable this filthy administration to continue what it's doing. Someone suggested to me, Malloy, you're talking about codependency. Don't get in the way of it. You know what happens with codependents, whether they're in alcoholic relationships or abusive relationships, or you can't, you know, it's a joke. The police go to somebody's house to arrest a husband whom the neighbors have reported is beating the living hell out of his wife, and the wife then, when the cops come, attacks the cops. No, I'm not talking about battered wife syndrome. I'm talking about people who are totally codependent, like the White House. This corrupt, filthy White House and this corrupt, filthy White House press corps, with the exception of Helen Thomas. And on any given day, maybe one or two other ones. So the only function of this White House press briefing is to provide, I don't know what it provides anyone else, this little radio program tucked away here in the elbow of the day, way back, way up here, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock on the West Coast. Here we are, little tiny radio program. It provides comedy of the most sick, dark nature. Is that all the press corps is? The press briefings are for? Is to provide some little talk show host tucked away? The Malloy program, something to scream and retch and laugh about? Is that it? Or are they supposed? I'm who else picks up? I know Randy picks up these sound bites. Okay, Randy picks up the sound bites too. Her producer finds this idiocy, this moronic crap. There was a time back in the Air America days, as a matter of fact, Randy and I used to share, we did, didn't we? We'd occasionally, if we missed a soundbite, we'd call her producer, or if they missed one, they'd call us. I don't know who else does that. I'm sure other talk show hosts do it, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. But what is the point every single day that there is one of these briefings? This half-witted geek, this Tony Snow, who seems to enjoy what he's doing. That's the part that is maddening. He enjoys being a half-wit. He enjoys being I don't know what the hell he is. A Fox News spawn. Like I say, he had to go back and loofah Bill O'Reilly's rather round ass or play tickle butt with Sean and Alan. And just get out of the way, Tony. Please get out of the way. Get out of the way. Oh, never mind. I get way too worked up, Kathy. I get way too worked up. All right. We're going to take a break here. Is it too early? Yeah, it is too early for me to get a glass of wine. Ah, damn. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to do your phone calls and a couple other items I want to drop into the mix. But be prepared. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. John sends me an email. It reminds me, I've forgotten this. Tony Snow was an editor for the Washington Times. That's a newspaper owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon before he joined Fox. Now, the Reverend Moon, of course, has told the world, including the Bush crime family. It's another one of the major financiers behind the Bushes, the royal family of Saudi Arabia. And Sun Myung Moon, who says he is he's the Christ, no matter what this guy from Puerto Rico says. Reverend Moon is the Christ. He is the incarnation of the Christ, and he can prove it. If you want to look closely, you'll see holes in his hands. But the Reverend Moon, who has been called the one true daddy, who has replaced John Wright's, who has replaced J.C. as the new Messiah, and a lot more. Well, I can't say that word. One true daddy, that would be Moon, makes the Mormons look like true believers. And as for the shoe lady, how sad, how pathetic. John, yeah, I've forgotten that Tony Snow had been an editor at the Washington Times. The only two people I can think of who occasionally pop out of the slime to ask rational questions, Martha Raddatz from ABC, I think, and David Gregory from NBC. The only one who is consistently the type of cynic and acerbic attacker, as the White House press corps should be, is Helen Thomas. Hey. So, an email here from Kay in San Francisco, and then I want to go to your phone calls, all right? You know the number, don't you? 800-989-1480. There's an open line if you want to jump in here. Kay from San Francisco wrote in regarding Joy's call last night. Joy from California. Dear Mike and Kathy, listening to yesterday's podcast, I was struck by a couple of the points your caller Joy made. Keith Olbermann interviews an official from the CIA who says that Al-Qaeda may attack us with a nuclear bomb, and Bush is ignoring it. Cy Hirsch reports that the U.S. is secretly funding jihad groups who are affiliated with Al-Qaeda through third parties like Prince Bandar and the Saudis. Am I crazy, or does it seem plausible that this is merely a continuation of the Bush administration's pre-9/11 method of operating? Let's see here. Information on possible attacks being ignored by the president, the U.S. being attacked by Saudi hijackers affiliated with Al-Qaeda. Oh, well, never mind. I'm just one of those lefty conspiracy nuts. But seriously, the more that this kind of information comes out, the more I believe that this administration had a vested interest and possibly more than a passive role in what occurred in this country on 9/11. Unfortunately, Joy's points really rattled that nerve with me. Kay in San Francisco. Yeah, I understand, Kay. Sure. Most of us don't pause. We're terrified. We don't dare stop and consider the possibility that the Bush crime family either made the events of September 11, 2001 occur or let them occur. We can't. Most of us, 99% of us, can't entertain that thought. That an American administration is so lawless, so out of control, so corrupt, that it would allow or encourage or assist in the planning of an attack like that that occurred on this country on September 11th. Why, if you believe that the Bush crime family could have done that, you would be inclined to believe that, oh, I don't know, somewhere in the Bush family background, there might have been someone who financed Hitler. Oops. You might believe that there was a Bush family member who assisted in the Holocaust with the absolute demonic, psychopathic murder of 6 million Jews. Oops. Wait a minute. Oh, yeah. That's right. Prescott Bush. So why is it so goddamn hard for people in this country to entertain the thought that Prescott's grandson might have been instrumental in engineering the deaths of 3,000 people on U.S. soil? If they were instrumental in assisting in the death of 6 million Jews and another 40 million world citizens as a result of World War II, if they had no problem doing that, and history shows that's exactly what they did, then why is it so damn difficult to get your mind around the idea? I'm not saying believe it. I'm not saying it's fact, but I'm saying why will so few people in this country approach the events of September 11th, 2001 as an inside job? Why? 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 I can't understand that. Well, maybe I can. Because if so many of us go there and start thinking about even the possibility of that having occurred, we would go mad. We'd go insane. We couldn't handle it. We'd give up. The stock market would tank. But why? How? I can't. You know, I'm not a genius. I wouldn't even say I'm a very bright man. But I can sit down and look at the Bush family, at its history that is readily available to anyone who wants to check it out. And I see a man named Prescott Bush, who was a Hitler admirer, who helped finance the son of a bitch. And I look at what Hitler did, and I look at what Prescott Bush did. And I look at what the Bush family has done for the past 75 years. And then I think, well, he was handed a daily brief that said Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States, and nothing happened. What? The Mossad knew, Israeli intelligence knew probably the identity of every single hijacker that hit this country. And if Mossad knew, then our intelligence knew. And if our intelligence knew, then our executive branch knew. And they did nothing. Why can't anyone get their mind around? Not anyone. I mean, a lot of people do. But why? You know, the key to everything with this corrupt, murderous regime is what occurred on September 11, 2001. What is wrong with people that is not just a given with everybody? Everybody. You don't have to believe. You can pick and choose what type of scenario you want, but for God's sake, can you at least entertain the plausibility? Not to mention the possibility or the probability, but the plausibility that the Bush family, had involvement in what occurred in this country on September 11, 2001. Why? I don't get that. I don't get that. Why does nobody find it odd? Not nobody, I'm exaggerating here, but why do so few of us find it odd that when it came Bush and Cheney's turn to testify before in front of the this fake-ass 9/11 investigation committee, that Bush refused to go without Cheney, and neither of them would allow themselves to be placed under oath? Doesn't that mean anything? Doesn't it, if they can depose Bill Clinton under oath about whether or not he had oral sex with his girlfriend, you mean to tell me that they cannot depose under oath the president, the vice president, about an attack on this country? I am not in a good mood tonight. And for those of you who are saying, all right, enough of the screaming bastard. Okay, I understand. I know this is not very good radio. But I can't. It just makes me want to rend my garments and flail myself with birch branches and wallow around in a vat of ashes. When I stop and think that so few Americans can even get their mind around the idea that Bush is responsible what occurred on September 11, 2001.
I'll tell you what to say. Tell them that the Nazis never really went away. They're out there burning houses down and peddling racist lies. And we'll never rest again until...
To the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed.
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Malloy.
Ah, 21 past the hour. Have you all been to commondreams.org? There is an essay there by George Lakoff. The words none dare say, : nuclear war. And if there's, I know you're tired of hearing people say, oh, this is required reading. But it is. Commondreams.org, the words none dare say, nuclear war. And find out where Hillary Clinton stands on nuking Iran. Find out where John Edwards stands on nuking Iran. Find out where John McCain stands on nuking Iran. Find out where all of these candidates stand on launching a first-strike nuclear attack on another country. Go ahead. Go ahead. CommonDreams.org. Just go get the damn article. The words none dare say, : nuclear war. You know who George Lakoff is. You know, you've read his stuff. Go get this, please. Bush and Cheney, find out what their position is on a nuclear attack against Iran. Republicans and Democrats who want to be president or who are president, find out what they say about the first use of nuclear weapons against another country. This is how insane it's gotten. Are you aware of that? Are you aware? I know a lot of you think the world of John Edwards. Oh, I do too. I really do. I think the world of John Edwards. Find out what Barack Obama says about the first use of nuclear weapons. I think the world of Barack Obama. What a nice, fresh young man. Oh, glory, glory. How did it get this insane? I don't know. I really don't know. Again, not to wax all nostalgic on you, but I remember the anti-nuke movement in this country in the late 70s and into the 80s. A lot of people were very serious about it. Helen Caldicott was the preeminent spokesperson for the anti-nuke movement, Greenpeace, in all of its efforts, to the point of even being attacked by the French Navy to try to stop nuclear testing, bombs in the Pacific. Helen Caldicott pleading, begging 30 years ago on behalf of the planet's children, not on behalf of the planet's fetuses, but on behalf of the living, breathing children. Please, she said, stop it. Stop it. And we didn't listen. Nah, now we're having too much fun playing mutually assured destruction. No. We're having too much fun doing models on nuclear winter. No. We're having too much fun trying to explain to the American people what the end of the human race would mean. It would mean that nothing ever existed. No Beethoven, no Rembrandt, no Snoop Dogg, nothing. And now we have people who say they're what? They don't say the liberal word. Oh, Christ, no. Oh, I'm not. No. I'm progressive. Liberal? No, not me. We have people who are Democrats. I think they're Democrats. They claim to be Democrats, talking about the first use of nuclear weapons against Iran. Oh, they couch it in euphemistic terms.
No option should be off the table.
No option should be off the table. How did this happen? Wasn't there... I remember here in Georgia, we had Georgians Against Nuclear Energy, GAIN. There was the Clamshell Alliance. There was I mean, all these anti-nuke groups who struggled. And now this ignorant son of a bitch, Tony Snow, says that Greenpeace is advocating the use of nuclear energy. How did this happen?
When they say, repent, I wonder what they meant. When they say, repent, I wonder what they meant. When they say,
view our nuclear arsenal as a deterrent. I'm interested in having an arsenal at my disposal.
Mother, do you think she's good enough? Mother, do you think she's dangerous?
Twenty-five before the hour. Vicki wanted me to mention to you a new website, Wes Clark's new website, StopIranWar.com. Wesley Clark's new website, StopIranWar.com. So check it out. Okay, StopIranWar.com, and please get George Lakoff's article from CommonDreams.org about nuclear. Not that, you know, reading it is going to or going to Wesley Clark's website is going to stop anything from happening in and of itself. But you know, if we can just get informed. If we just can throw the filters away, the crack White House press corps and these degenerate, murderous bastards that now run this country, not just this country, a couple more, too, frankly, is it melodramatic to suggest that the survival, once again, of the human race is at stake here? You know, didn't we all think, against all common sense, didn't we all think that that threat had been lifted? Of course, it never had. The Berlin Wall came down, and Gorbachev declared an end to the Soviet Union, and we all said, oh, well, it's all over. And it's not. Read Jonathan Schell's The Fate of the Earth that was written back in the 80s. You should, if you haven't read it. I'm sure most people over the age of 30 have read that. For people under the age of 30, go get it. Jonathan Schell, S-C-H-E-L-L, Jonathan Schell's The Fate of the Earth. But we thought, you know, we did, didn't we? Nothing wrong with that. We thought, oh, well, the wall's down. Communism is dead. We won. Yay! We won. We don't have to worry anymore. All of us over a certain age who grew up doing duck and cover drills. I mean, since I've been a kid, my entire life, and everybody who has been born since 1946, it not just me, every single person on the planet who was born subsequent to 1946, and eventually that's going to be all of us, has been living under the threat of total, complete, nearly instantaneous annihilation. Now that's big. That's difficult to deal with. So what does the human mind do? Oh no, let's push that one way, way deep into the unconscious. Can't handle that. And in doing that, in pushing it away, of course, we don't deal with it. And in not dealing with it, we allow it to continue. And here we are. So, when you stop and consider that, well, how many people on the planet right now? 6 billion, 7 billion, 8 billion? Of all those people, probably 80% have spent their entire lives either knowing or not knowing that they are just somebody's madness away from annihilation. Now, I realize in some parts of the world, that's a daily given. If you live in the occupied territories of the Palestinian territories, if you live in Iraq, if you live in South Lebanon, if you live in Darfur province, if you... okay, sure! But I'm talking about everybody! Every single human being, every single living thing. Oh my God, I sound like Jonathan Schell. Okay, I'm sorry. Get all luxury. Got drifted off. I'm sorry. Tamp it back down. Hold on a second. There you go. Okay, get it back in there. Back down. Get that son of a bitch down there way underneath the levels of consciousness. Get it down there. Okay. Let's take some phone calls. All right? Okay. The number here is 800-989-1480. Let's start with Tristan, who's calling from East Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Tristan.
Hey, Mike. I called tonight. I mean, I love your show. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I think I have to dramatically disagree with you about Al Gore. I'm a pretty young guy. I'm 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
When I was 15 is when I first really started covering or thinking about politics.
Right.
And I read a biography of Al Gore at that time by Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair.
Yeah.
Who, they're lefties. They're people.
Well, let's be real here. They're beyond lefties, okay? Calling them lefties is like calling me mildly radical. Now, which is not to say that I don't appreciate what they write. You can read their stuff on a regular basis. Alexander Coburn, of course, writes on a periodic basis for the Nation, and they have their own website. And you know, they're good at what they do. But judging Al Gore by the writings of Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair is not really, I don't think, a way to judge Al Gore.
Well, what I'm saying, though, is even if you take the facts alone, he was a founding member of the DLC. He was someone who maintained a lower... This is kind of stupid, but he maintained a lower GPA at Harvard than George W. Bush.
Okay, well, I'm not sure why you're telling me this. You sound like someone who's just attacking an ad hominem attack against Al Gore for no reason. If I'm not disagreeing that Al Gore was not a founder of the DLC, of course he was.
So
let me finish. So was Sam Nunn. So was Bill Clinton. So were so many Southern Democrats, Southern white Democrats, who realized that the Republican, the Nixon administration had thoroughly destroyed the Democratic Party in the South with racial issues. Who realized that when Lyndon Johnson signed the civil rights legislation in 1964, he said at the time, this ends the Democratic Party in the South. So Al Gore, yeah, he was a founding member. So what? Do you believe in people, the ability of someone to change their mind, their attitude, and the direction that they're going politically? Do you believe that's possible?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Do you think that maybe Al Gore has had a change because he realizes that stupid-ass Southern white man politics is nothing compared with the destruction of the planet? Do you suppose that's a possibility? Look, all I'm saying, I'm not trying to be condescending to you because you're 21. I'm not. What I'm saying is, for God's sake, don't let Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair dictate to you what you're going to think of Al Gore.
Okay.
They also put out, are you familiar with counterpunch.org?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So many times I agree with what Alexander Coburn says, but I also know that Alexander Coburn is as much of a screamer as I am, only more so. He's really left wing, and there's nothing, not that there's anything wrong with that. But if you're going to make a decision about a politician, Tristan, read as much as you can. Don't stop with Alexander Coburn. Keep going. There's so much more to read. And then, have you read Earth in the Balance?
I haven't read Earth in the Balance.
Okay, no. then do that. That's Al Gore's book. Just read Earth in the Balance.
Well, I will read it.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, I think that we should start thinking about people who are not Al Gore.
Well, like who?
Anyone who's not one of these corporate thugs is what I'm saying. People who haven't been soiled by...
Okay, find me one.
Okay. Dennis Kucinich.
Other than Dennis Kucinich. There's a great ticket for you. Gore Kucinich. Other than Dennis Kucinich, find me one.
Well, I can't find you.
And as far as being a corporate whore, there's an element of Al Gore. Al Gore is in his early 60s. He was late 50s. I don't know. He's around my age. He was brought up in this country. He was a politician of a certain stripe. He did certain things. Yeah, you can call him a corporate whore. But read Earth in the Balance, and then tell me if you still think he's a corporate whore. Okay? I want you to call me back, Tristan, after you've read the book. Fair enough?
Okay.
All right, thank you. I appreciate you checking in.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour, back to your phone calls. Brian is calling from Manchester, New Hampshire. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Mike. How are you? Look, I think you can get even more on that. The Prescott Bush and his beloved Nazis, and him and Avril Harriman at NewHampshireGazette.com. Great journalism there by John Buchanan.
Okay.
And also, I want to say that talking about what the Bush crime family may have pushed little Junior up against the wall there and gave him another offer he couldn't refuse. It reminds me of Webster Tarpley's book, The Synthetic Terror, about 9/11. And the thinly veiled threat, somebody got inside the Secret Service and Air Force One codes and said, Angel is next, just as 9/11 was happening, just as he was sitting in a classroom for 40 or 50 minutes with his photo ops and all that while people were incinerated to death, for God's sakes. And I also like to say that the progressives won big in 2006, but the major corporate media doesn't want to admit to it. In my own state of New Hampshire, Carol Shea Porter, she was outspent in the New Hampshire primary by a big-time Democrat named Craig by 12 times. She still won the New Hampshire Democratic primary. She was outspent in the election by a Republican hack named Jeb Bradley. She still won the election, as did the other New Hampshire congressman, Paul Hose, a Democrat. And we won back 36 House seats, despite the fact that the Republican-controlled voting machines, they did suppress 4 to 5% of the Democratic vote in that so-called election as well. We only won the Senate by a hair-thin margin, and that, which we were barely holding on to. My prayers go out to Senator Johnson, of course, to please get well, sir. But the joke, Senator Traderman, I think we ought to have another website instead of not just the Al Gore one, but how about killjoelieberman.org?
That's
my words, not yours. It's not Uncle Mike.
No,
it's Brian from
Lancer. But you can't say stuff like that, Brian.
Okay.
I mean, you just can't.
I said it. Mike didn't say it. I said
well,
it.
No.
I'm
That's,
kidding. It's a joke. It's humor. I was just watching Dr. Strangelove and waiting for the Rand War. So.
I understand.
All right.
But look, let me leave it there, Brian. I appreciate you checking in, but. I think most of us understand you can't say things like that. You just can't. Some nutball out there may hear that and say, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. You know, and even if that's not the case, I don't want this program being targeted by either the government or the right-wing nutball bloggers. Oh, did you hear on the Malloy program last night? I push it far enough as it is, but don't use the K word on the program unless we're talking about Iraqi children. That's okay. I know, sometimes my cynicism even appalls me. Michael is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. This is the first time call.
Oh, welcome aboard.
Yeah, like you were talking about earlier, I don't think it's far-fetched at all to think that Bush and Cheney had something to do with 9/11, especially when the company who was running security at the World Trade Center was Securicom, and then the big shot there was Marvin Bush, as you may already know.
Yeah, isn't that, I mean, just another coincidence,
yeah.
That's all. You know.
Yeah, yeah. That isn't really why I called, though.
I know.
Today on Raw Story, there was a piece, and it had to do with a guy at the Pentagon named Gordon England, number two guy. Did you happen to see this?
I have not.
Well, he said the war on terror would be wrapped up maybe by about October 2008. And you know what happens the following month, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's...
They had, you know, it said all this stuff like, all our objectives will be met and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we declare victory and we go home and it'll all get done by October 2008. And the fact that there's an election the following month, hopefully.
Oh, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Yeah, I know.
It was unbelievable. That way, I take that back. Now, not turning to Bush here, nothing is unbelievable. You know?
You've got that right. All right. Well, Michael, thanks for checking in. I hope to hear from you again, okay?
Sure. Okay, Mike.
All right, sir. Take care. Take care. Good to hear from you. Chuck is calling from Pennsylvania. Hey, Chuck.
Hello, Mike. How's
Hi.
Your evening?
Doing fine. How are you?
Not bad. I just want to make the statement... in reference to your theory on the Bush family,
yeah.
And 9/11.
Yeah.
If we go back to the first time the Trade Center was hit in 93, I'm sure the Israeli intelligence had knowledge of that before it happened.
Why are you sure?
Well, you're so sure that Israeli intelligence about 9/11 before it happened.
Well, I'm sure based on several articles by rational investigative reporters who have pointed out what appear to be facts in the case. As far as the 93 bombing, I've read nothing that Mossad or FBI or the man in the moon had any knowledge of that one. So don't make assumptions. Assumptions could get you in trouble.
Well, it was all done by the same people, basically. And
well, no. According to law enforcement, the one who engineered the attack on 93 was an Egyptian, a blind Egyptian sheikh, whose followers are, I believe, radical Islamists. But he was an Egyptian. The people that got us on September 11th, if you believe the official story, were Saudis. And there is a difference, really, believe it or not, between Egyptians and Saudis. I don't think Israel would ignore a daily brief that said Osama determined to strike in the U.S. for one thing. So no, as far as what happened in '93. I have had no indications that Mossad knew anything about that. I've got to leave it there, though. Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again. Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. All right, well, let's just let's go back to your phone calls. We have what? From the Associated Press is on the line. Mary is calling from Colorado Springs. Mary, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to give you an update from the Associated Press, since you may not have the latest wire there in your studio.
Okay.
Ted Haggard is still a heterosexual.
Okay. That's, that's certainly good news, I guess. Did I put somebody on hold? No, I didn't. So let's start fresh here. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, I think that call was a phony.
I don't know. How do I know you're for real?
Oh, don't start up with me, man. But anywho, I called up to talk about what David Geffen had to say about the Clintons. How come nobody's talking about David Geffen running for president? I thought what David Geffen had to say about the Clintons was so excellent, and it was so on the money. And of course, nobody in the mainstream media is talking about, you know, the reason why he hates the Clintons in the first place. That's because the Leonard Peltier case. For some reason that, you know, the media, they don't want to bring up these sorts of cases because, you know, maybe people start having their doubts about, the way things are done by law enforcement agencies like the FBI.
Right, but Joe, you and I both know that if you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock in the morning went out to the nearest major intersection in Brookings and stopped 100 people and said, "Do you have any knowledge as to who Leonard Peltier was?" and just stop there. 100 out of 100 would not know what the hell you're talking about.
Well, actually, because the influence I'm having these days, it'd be at least 10. You know, just to brag on myself. What?
Would know?
Yes.
Well, maybe in Brookings, but try Los Angeles.
No, I know what you mean. Well, Los Angeles, that's a different story altogether.
The point I'm trying to make is Geffen, like all of us, when we become billionaires, Geffen has his issues. And not to diminish the horror of Leonard Peltier being imprisoned illegally for all these years, perhaps for the murder of the FBI agents, not to diminish that, not to question it. And Jesus, God, I hope I don't get any emails about that particular case. But the point is, when you become a multi-millionaire to a degree that David Geffen, you can play. You can ship $3, $4, $5 million to the Clintons 1 year, and the next year you can rag on him because he didn't pardon your boy. This is bat squeeze. I don't give a damn what David Geffen says. You get my point? It turns out that what he said about the Clintons is probably right on the money. But, you know, that little claptrap, a little high school gossipy BS with Maureen Dowd playing the role of, the unpopular girl who has to pass along the high school gossip makes me sick. That's all I'm saying. I don't give a damn what David Geffen says about the Clintons. He was content at one time to send them millions. So what difference does it make now?
Well, to me, it makes a lot of difference that you actually do have somebody that's powerful that would actually tell the truth about something.
Joe, that's not the issue. The issue is Leonard Peltier has been in prison for what, 35 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was buddies with Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton was in a position to do something about it.
But wait a second. Bill Clinton was in office 8 years.
Yeah.
Did he not have a chance to pardon him every year?
Well,
why didn't David? No, it's not semantics. Why didn't David Geffen raise hell with Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton was pardoning Mark Rich? Why didn't Geffen cut off
the
money flow in 93, 94, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99? You understand what I'm saying? David Geffen is a wealthy phony ass who gives liberals a bad name. I don't give a rat's ass if David Geffen ever gets what he wants. Now, I'm not trying to defend the Clintons. I just get sick of multi-rich people who really don't give a goddamn Joe what kind of government we have in this country. They don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. They don't care if it's right-wing or left-wing. They don't care if it's fascist, communist, or something in between, because they are absolutely insulated by their money. So, come on, Joe, don't get into the discussion about David Geffen busting up on Hillary and Bill. Who gives a damn?
Well, I do give a damn about the death penalty case, about the death penalty in general. How a lot of the politicians, like the Clintons, will take advantage of that issue for their own political purpose.
But what I'm saying is, you don't need David Geffen to tell you that
Well, of course they don't need him. Then
why bring him up?
Come on,
Joe. You're much smarter than this. You know, some egomaniacal twit from Hollywood who has hundreds of millions of dollars decides to make his views known, and everybody gets all the Twitter. Come on, Joe. You're much smarter than that. You don't need David Geffen to comment on something. Come on, stop it.
There was one other death penalty case I wanted to comment on. That's the Mumia Abu-Jamal case.
Right.
Which, there are no billionaires commenting on that case.
Wait a minute. Why not? I mean, if David Geffen has his panties in a wad over Leonard Pelletier, why not Mumia?
Actually, I should backtrack. There have been the Hollywood guys commenting on that. And Bill O'Reilly said on his show last week, you got all these people who've gotten on the side of this cop killer in Philadelphia, and then he doesn't even mention Mumia Abu-Jamal's name when he says that. And these freaks in the right wing media, they do this all the time. But I do have an update about the fact that Frank Serpico, the guy that was played by Al Pacino in the movie, he has come out. And said that he thinks that Mumia Abu-Jamal was set up by the police there in Philadelphia.
Okay, Joe, may I interrupt? Let me give you a newsflash. Eventually, Mumia will be executed, and Leonard Pelletier is never going to be released from prison. Okay, there's a newsflash for you. Not that either situation is just or unjust, rational or irrational. That's just a given. Okay, these are political prisoners in this country. They have become political prisoners. Their crimes of being accused of and convicted of murder are beside the point. They have become political prisoners. Mumia will be executed. Pelletier will die in prison. End the story. All right?
Well, the only reason I'm commenting, I think they're both innocent. If I didn't think they were innocent, I wouldn't even give a damn.
Okay, I understand, and I'm not denigrating your efforts on behalf of either man. I'm just saying, given the system in this country, both of these people are going to get the full force of the sentence meted out against them, no matter what David Geffen's prissy little ass decides to do about withholding or donating money to the Clintons. It's insane. This thing is insane. Joe, I got to leave it there. Thanks. Always good to hear from you. It's total madness. Those are two very pertinent cases. Everybody ought to know about it. But David Geffen, screw David Geffen and Maureen Dowd, and for that matter, the Clintons. Mama's.
Why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make believe.
can't believe everything you see. So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news tonight.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you on Nova M Radio.
Break my stride. Make me smile.
21 past the hour. Now, Joe from Brookings, Oregon, and I have been, talking with each other on the airwaves for, good God, Kathy, what? 7 years, 8 years, a long time. So, no, we're not mad with each other. Not at all. If that sounded like, oh, Jesus, he's getting... No. That's just the way Joe and I talk. As far as Mumia is concerned, Malachi in Saskatoon wants me to know that Mumia's death sentence was commuted in 2001. He's now in jail for life. Well, there's a PS to that that I just sent to Malachi, and that is the state of Pennsylvania appealed that ruling in 2006. And there's a chance that he will once again, I think for the third time, be sentenced to death and may or may not have the sentence carried out. So, and again, I don't want to get into either case, Leonard Pelletier or Mumia Jabal, because it's just pointless. It's just pointless. The people who should be getting into those two cases are their attorneys, And the people advocating for both men in the situation, or advocating for the other side. It's way, way, way beyond any discussion on this program. Stefan is calling from Denver. Stefan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Pleasure's all mine.
Well, I always tune in. I always stream you. I called in once a long time ago, but I was really compelled to call you tonight because I think, and this is so unbelievably off subject, it'll sound odd, but I think that Rosie O'Donnell is being so underappreciated in a certain sense for what she's doing. It's kind of crazy because I didn't know that she was saying some of the stuff that she's saying, but...
Well, what is she saying? I don't watch The View, so what's she saying?
Well, I don't have a TV anymore, so I started... I'm an internet junkie, so I just went on there yesterday.
Right.
And it's great. There's one lady on there who's this younger, blonde lady. She's not a real celebrity. She's from the Survivor show from the first season. Total conservative, total... You know, just makes all those ignorant comments that
right.
are out of place, and even the audience disagrees with her.
Right.
And then there's Rosie, and it's just amazing. Okay, if you go on ABC Daytime, you can hear the last clip. They did something on the war in Iraq, and Rosie was, you know, talking about how they should repeal the Patriot Act and replace it with the Constitution, and just all kinds of stuff. And you know, I didn't
really
know
she's getting real aggressively political, huh?
She is, and Joy. It's amazing. And it's not, you know, frou-frou. It's pretty...
Well, that's good. A lot of people may think this is a frivolous conversation, but I'll tell you what, if you have somebody on a daytime program like that I don't know who their target audience is, I'm making the assumption that it's women 35 to 64. If that is their target audience, and you have somebody on the program saying the things that Rosie O'Donnell is saying about... the criminality of this war and George W. Bush. Well, you're absolutely right. I hadn't heard about this. It's very underappreciated what this woman is doing, and good on her for doing it. Because how does that audience hear those kinds of comments, right?
Yeah, they hadn't been, and you know, especially earlier, because you know, I always pay attention to that kind of stuff. I kind of have some fatalistic, feudalistic kind of views on the opinion of the American people. But it's encouraging to see Oberman and Rosie. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to last with Rosie on there, but the ratings have gone up, and she is saying it like it is. It's amazing. That's all I wanted to say, though. That's,
okay, and I agree with you. You take the truth where you find it. If it comes on a silly, I shouldn't say silly because I've not seen the program. But if the truth comes on an afternoon, I guess it's on in the afternoon.
Yep.
A chat program on television. More power to whoever's putting the truth out. Thanks for calling, Stefan.
Thank you.
All right, stay in touch. And I mean that. So what? You know, look at kind of the kind of acerbic truths you get sometimes on with the late night guys like David and Jay and Craig and. Oh, I sound like a real in-person, don't I, using their first names? Well, you know what I mean. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program.
How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, my friend. Kind of having some rough going down here. I got a toothache, and that's not to mention the fact that this Katrina thing's about to overwhelm me.
Hey, hold on a second, Sarge. I got to do a break. We'll come back right after the break here. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. Stay with us.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Before the hour. By the way, we have a couple open lines here and another 25 minutes to go in the program. So jump in here, 800-989-1480. Back to Sarge in Mississippi. All right, where were we, Sarge?
Okay, I was just going to tell you why I called, really. I wanted to.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that might help. I wanted to put in the thing about Al Gore. I believe that if anyone stops and considers the fact that Gore's making the climate such a priority matter, that tells him a lot about where he stands on issues now, regardless of his past. When you take the stands he's taking on the environmental issues of the day, that's right. Going to change your whole perspective in everything.
Well, that's true. And I do believe in political redemption. I do believe that in occasionally people can have their so-called conversions on the road to Damascus and realize that the attitude that they've had for a number of years was a wrong attitude. I mean, look at George Wallace, for God's sake.
And then remember, too, the Democrats kind of bailed out on him, too.
That's right.
He did fight this thing all the way to the Supreme Court on the election deal, and then all of a sudden, poof, it's all gone.
Right.
I mean, how much further can you take it?
And well, that's true. So,
I think that's kind of a bomb rap on the man, and I really think we need to start listening to him and seeing and contacting him, asking him, where are you going to stand on this issue and that, and let's kind of put this 2000 deal away, because first of all, it's a fluff issue.
Well, I think you're right, but I think the almost the larger issue to me, Sarge, is when Tristan, bless his heart, who's obviously trying to find some kind of truth that'll work for him. I mean, aren't you? Aren't I? I mean, we all are. But to stop at one critique of Al Gore, especially by Alexander Coburn, and again, I have a lot of respect for Coburn. I like his writing. He's way further left than I am. I don't know how I can define that, but he really is. He's over there near Communist Party USA territory. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying. But to stop with just Alexander Coburn, I don't think has a good word to say for anybody, any politician in this country, and maybe he shouldn't. But, you can't make your decisions if you are going to be politically mature. You can't make your decisions about someone who's in politics by reading one or two points of view about that person.
Well, I've actually talked on the phone a couple of times with Dennis Kucinich, and he's just an excellent candidate. But I've got to say that there's a lot about Gore that makes me have to favor Gore over Kucinich, as much as I hate to do that, because I think both of them are great candidates.
Well, I'd like to see at some point some well-known politician, and I'm sorry, but this is the way it works in this country, some well-known politician who would make a run for the presidency or whatever and get the nomination, deliberately and consciously include Dennis Kucinich on the ticket, because that's about the only way he's ever going to get noticed. He is a politician during the last election cycle, I told everybody, I am a Kucinich supporter. How many times do we have him on the air, Kathy? Twice, three times, four times? I said, I will support this man until the primary season is over, and then I'll back the whoever the Democratic candidate is.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you what, I don't care who it is. Barack Obama does not get my endorsement, and I'll tell you the number one reason why. I have contacted his office over and over and over again about Katrina. In fact, I just called his office yesterday. They said, finally, for the first time in four phone calls, they took my number. They still have yet to return my call.
Yeah,
it took four phone calls for them to even claim they wrote down my number, and they told me three times that they did not care about the problems with Katrina in Mississippi. Now that is not a good statement to make, just because you can't carry the area in your view, which strangely they could if they really would get down here and do some work. They could carry this area, but there until they break up and smell the coffee that they've got to expose the corruption, because this doesn't affect just Mississippi. This affects the whole United States, because people, that's your tax money being stolen.
Yeah.
So that kind of attitude, that's not going to wash, and I cannot support a candidate who's going to play politics when we got people dying. I'm sorry. That's just not the way I am.
Yeah, I hear you.
Michael, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much, buddy.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. All right, who we got here? Oh my God, it's our piano tuner, jazz musician from Las Vegas. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, John Neames here. You always play my music. Thanks.
It's great music. Thank you.
Hey, I just had to call tonight. I went to the 911 accountability conference in Arizona, and it was really, really good.
Yeah.
And I just sent you an email about the Pentagon.com has some new information on that whole flight path. They had some, witnesses who just take the whole flight path, the official story, and just if you look at it, you'll see it's really some good new evidence.
You sent me a link?
Yeah, in that email, the Pentagon.com. I urge people to go to that.
Yeah, now that's not misspelled.
No, it's supposed to be Pentagon, not
Pentagon.
Con. It's very important new information on the flight that was headed toward the Pentagon. And I'm not going to say anything. Just go. I want your listeners to go there and do your research. But the reason I called, there's a few things. One is last night, remember Tony Snow was referring to the. He was asked a question about the so-called Cheney assassination attempt with a terrorist,
right.
Suicide bomber, and he referred to that as a crime scene.
Right.
And I want to tell anybody who believes the 911 official story to realize how our government treated the crime scene at the bottom of the towers. They got rid of it as fast as they could. They did.
Oh, where's the scrap metal now, in China somewhere?
Yeah, they sent it to China. Now, I thought that when he said referred to that as a crime scene, yesterday, I thought I wanted to call, and I'm glad you got me on tonight, because anyone who still believes the story, the government treated 911 as not a crime scene, but as something to get out as fast as they could.
Right.
Get away. So, and like you were talking about early with Bush and Cheney, had to go in behind closed doors and not under oath to testify. What does this all tell people? I mean, and by the way, Alexander Coburn is the reason I quit The Nation, by the way.
Oh, really?
He referred to all of us 911 truth people as believing in, as akin to believing in UFOs.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll tell you, another writer that I really like to read who also will have nothing to do with the 911 truth is Robert Perry, who writes at consortiumnews.com and who is the guy who broke in America, broke the story on Iran-Contra all those years ago when he used to write for Newsweek. And he also just rejects it out of hand. I don't quite understand these guys because they are not. I mean, they don't have crystal balls that can look back in time. They won't even entertain the idea. There are a couple of, I think the entire Nation editorial board rejects the idea of complicity in what occurred on September 11th by members of the Bush crime family.
Yeah,
I think they all do.
Right. My dad's written like three letters to them saying, they say we don't own the Nation. Yeah, why don't you get on with 911 Truth and start getting to the bottom of it?
Well, you know, The Nation is not an investigative journal. It's a political journal. But I agree with you. I don't know what Mother Jones has done, and I should because I subscribe to it. I don't know what they've done regarding 9/11. But The Nation should at least, I think, with writers like John Nichols and people who have come down hard and nasty on those of us who refuse to accept the official story, I don't think The Nation ought to do that. I think in fairness to people of good conscience, which to me are the vast majority of the 9/11 disbelievers like me, people of good conscience who have a lot of questions, rather than just dismiss us as some kind of space flying saucer space freaks, at least offer, not that I turn to The Nation for this, but offer up the dignity of the question.
Right.
I don't turn to anybody for that. If I have a question, I give it the dignity that it needs myself. I don't look for validation from anybody or anything, and I'm sure you're the same way.
Right.
But it just kind of pisses me off with The Nation. I'm a Nation associate, and I've been a subscriber to Mother Jones for I don't know how long. Ever since Michael Moore was writing for them. He was the editor of The Nation for a while.
Right.
As kind of a hoot. Not The Nation, I'm sorry, Mother Jones. And it just irritates me.
Yeah,
when
Michael Moore's another guy doesn't address the questions of 9/11. I always tell people that, as Webster Tarpley says, they're the left gatekeepers.
I know,
And they really, you know, there's so much evidence, it's ridiculous.
It is,
you
indeed.
You can't ignore it.
All right, John, thanks, man.
Okay,
I appreciate you checking in.
Thanks for playing my music.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Don't delay. Start working for your dream today. And no matter what it is.
Oh, my God. This is John Neems.
With hard work, you can make it. You've got to believe. I said you've got to. Got to believe, I said you've got to believe. I said you've got to
Now we're at war, but we're at war to keep the peace.
Reggie writes in, Amy Goodman at Democracy Now! Won't touch the subject either of the truth of 9/11. Reg writes, something is not kosher in all this. The gatekeepers refuse to consider any of the evidence that has emerged and won't even support reopening the investigation. And Andre sends me a link here. It's at abc.go.com. two clips from the View. In the first clip, Rosie O'Donnell says the Bush administration is silencing the media on the facts of war. In the second clip, Joy, is it B-R? B-E-H-E-R, B-R? I don't know her name because I don't watch the program. Maybe I should. She says in the second clip, on air, these are liars and murderers, referring to the Bush administration. So, you know, good for them for having the courage to do that. And on ABC, no less. All right, look for that program to be canceled pretty quick. I know that about Amy Goodman, and I don't understand the reluctance on the part of Amy Goodman. She usually will interview anybody about anything that is pertinent to the political life of the United States or our interactions with foreign governments. It is easy for her to criticize the actions of Israel, even though Amy Goodman is Jewish. She doesn't pull their punches when she does interviews, and I don't understand. I really don't. Why so many of the leading lights on the left, Amy Goodman, Coburn, Robert Perry, Jeffrey St. Clair, I'm not sure about who's the drunk who left the Nation. You know, Kathy's looking at me like, what? Who's the guy? Christopher Hitchens, thank you. The drunk. Well, he is. He's a drunken sot. Who called him that? Everybody knows Hitchens is a full-blown alcoholic. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, if you're hell-bent on suicide, I guess that's one way to go. But so many of these left gatekeepers just refuse to get into this, and I don't get that. I don't get that. And they are called gatekeepers for a very important reason. If it is discussed on Democracy Now!, if it is discussed by Alexander Coburn, if it is brought up by John Nichols, if it is discussed by Robert Perry, if you are paying attention to what passes for truth and what is truth in so many instances in the political dialogue in this country, then those people carry tremendous weight. So I don't know. I have no idea. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight in Phoenix and also handled your calls as he does most nights. I don't know how he does all this, but he does it every night and does it damn well. Chris in Minnesota, who is our senior correspondent, provides the basis for a number of the stories you hear on this program. Mark Marshall, who is our webmaster at MikeMalloy.com, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board. If you want to get into a real spitting contest, go there sometime. And I invite people to go to NovaMRadio.com and sign up for downloads and podcasts and all sorts of good stuff. And a chance to win 10 grand. I mean, what the hell? You can't sniff at that in Bush world. If you are uncomfortable using PayPal or whatever system we're using now, you can send a check to Nova M Radio, 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. Nova M Radio, 824 Washington, Phoenix, 85034. I thought surely we'd be to 5,000 members by now. I'm sorry, Kathy. Kathy always says, don't guilt trip people. And I'm not, because I don't respond to that. But I keep thinking about that 20,000 people who signed a petition online to try to, and the tens of thousands of emails that went to Air America and phone calls when the rat bastard accountant there fired me. And I just wonder where all these folks are. I mean, so many of you said, we'll pay to get you back on the air. Okay, well, okay. All right. I'm not, Kathy. I'm not guilt tripping. It's just a question. Yeah?
Well, people who join Nova M aren't paying to get you on the air or have you on the air. You're on the air free. You broadcast live free. They're only paying for the privilege of hearing you at their convenience.
Right. So, email here from Pete who says, Mike, not true about Amy Goodman and 9/11. A few months ago, she hosted a debate between the editors of Loose Change, the Internet movie, and the editor of Popular Mechanics, who totally refutes all the 9/11 truth stuff. Okay, I wasn't aware of that. But I think what I'm saying, Pete, is Amy Goodman and Alexander Coburn and John Nichols and Robert Perry and these very powerful voices on the left do not advocate for a real investigation into it, not just the events of that day. I think we're all fairly clear on what appears to be the events of that day. Three buildings came down. The Pentagon was hit by something, certainly not a jetliner, and a crash occurred of some sort in Pennsylvania, probably an airplane struck by a missile because of the debris pattern. And none of this gets discussed. So if Amy Goodman deigned to have on the smartasses at Popular Mechanics and the young people, how old are the people who put together Loose Change? Are they out of their teens yet? Okay. And God bless them. But what about advocating for the questions that have been raised by everybody from Stephen Jones to Alex Jones, or not Stephen Jones, but, I can't think of it. But the BYU physics professor, Alex Jones, on his radio program, on and on and on. Why not just address the questions? That's all. Thanks for participating tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.